if you don't know how this works, you should get to know it. I was going to talk about empirical evidence about basically.
Okay. So I'm going to go through good backgrounds on slides this year, so we'll start with that. So, and if you don't know that statement, so there's your title. You know, shutting down the running game by limiting steal attempts. One of the points about stolen bases is that it's the only official, well, one of two, official categories that record which represent willful action on the part of somebody. The other is a sacrifice bunt. I mean, a lot of people say they're trying to hit home runs, but I don't think we count that as willful action. But stealing the base and a sacrifice bunt, you actually intended to do this. That makes them different in terms of analysis, rather than just seeing what happened, just think people trying to do it. What is usually focused on is how often people are successful. We hear about stolen base success rates, and there's a great calculation, or many calculations, a lot of people have calculated and modeled what is the break-even point. How bad is that caught stealing, how good is a stolen base? There's a range of values that different people come up with. I'm going to use two-thirds, this is 2-to-1's the handy ratio. Most people use that, some people use that, which means if you steal two bases for every one time you're caught stealing, it's a wash. You can help yourself, you didn't hurt yourself. That's more or less right. What is almost never looked at is how often do people attempt. Now, the frequency of attempting is maybe related to the frequency of success, and maybe not. And that's what I'm going to be spending most of my time talking about. I'm mostly going to talk about frequencies of attempts. So first of all, I have to do like I always do, and tell you how many games I studied. In 1947 through 2011, it's 121,000 games. It's 98.8% of the games played in that time. And I did have to break it down into two intervals there. From 1947 to 1950, it's just under 70% of the total. From 51 to 2011, it's 100% of the total. But as the footnote points out, that includes only 100 games of what we call deduced games, where we have approximated play-by-plays. If you don't know what I mean by that, we can talk about that later. But yeah, it's an obvious for a very large data set. So the next thing I get the slides out of order, I'm going to do this one. I thought I would do sort of a background. How often do steals happen? And it turns out that over the 65 seasons I'm looking at, 47 through 2011, there's a huge variation. The bottom one down there, and this one, is the American League in 1950. And that number is 0.22 per team per game. That means on average your team would go 5 games and steal 1 base. The high numbers at the top there are 0.95, which is almost 1 stolen base per game per team. Now that's an amazing variation on there. So the first thing to see in this graph is, gee, it changes all over the place. But there's other interesting things as well. Early part of the study in the 50s wasn't much of a running era. It goes up and up and up. You get to the 80s, and you get this amazingly high range with a huge difference between the two leagues. Now the three lines, which I'm doing off all the graphs I show, the green is the National League, the red is the American League, following the forever tradition of the red and green book for stats that the league always kept the reds in America, the greens in that. And the black is the Major League average. What I cannot explain, and I hope to have a lot of brilliant comments about this, why would the two leagues wait to start to say positive? I expect the two leagues to be pretty similar. What happened in 1980, that's when they started getting different, to make the National League have almost 20% more steals? And then why did that difference go away in 1992? Every time you see a league difference, the two things that come up, well, the first thing that comes up, of course, is the DH. This must be DH effect. DH came in 1973. It took until 1980 for people to notice the DH had happened. I don't think so. And if you're going to say that explains what happened in 1980, what happened in 1992 is that it went away. The DH is still there. I don't understand this. Once you get back to 1992, the leagues come back together, and there's a low point in 2003. So from 1992 to 2003, there's obviously a lot more offense, a lot more home runs. And since we have this willful action on the part of the runners and the managers, I presume people aren't being allowed to steal as much. It's cut back up a little bit. And the overall average is right now pretty much what for the last year is about what it's been for that entire period. Now let's do that. Oops. Which bases are stolen? Obviously there's three choices. And I'm sure everyone would be convinced that second base is the one which is stolen the most often. But here's exactly what that answer is. It's almost 90% is second, a little over 10% is third, and stealing home is less than 1%. I don't leave any supplies in the mountain this nice day to see what the numbers are. I decided I would do a one quick little check of the difference between stealing second and stealing third. Now this number is of all the split of these steals, that steal second as a percentage of total steals. And the league stay together, you get to 1980 again, and all of a sudden the chance of stealing second goes way down. From 1980 to 1992, the same time the leagues are coming apart, steals of second become less common, and steals of third become more common. So at the same time the two leagues are playing different games, everybody's stealing second and more often, excuse me, they're stealing second less often, and stealing third more often, but the two leagues are the same on this measure. So this is the time when the leagues are separate in total steals, but for this pattern of switching between second and third, they're the same. I don't know what started it, and then it stopped. So the coincidence of the timing, I think, is a little strange, but this is what we have for that. How about steal percentage? I mean, steals divided by steals plus caught stealing. Over the years, it has gone up. Back in the beginning of the study, it was barely 50%, and we're now up to like 73%, something like that. Got a trend line drawn in there, and the heavy horizontal line is the two-thirds of the break-even point. So not only does it show that runners are getting better, getting caught less often over the last 65 years, but also says it's only the last 15 years or so that stealing bases has been a net positive. For most of this time, stealing bases has been a net negative thing for a team to do. That's hard to sell to some people. Obviously, there's four different situations for a steal, for having a runner on having a chance to steal second, and I divide them into three because I combine two. First of all, you could have a runner only on first base. Obviously, there's a chance to steal second. Or you could have runners on first and third. That's a chance to steal second. Or, and the last two I put together, you have runners on first and second or bases loaded. I put them together because neither one isn't as common. And of course, in those last two categories, if you're going to steal second, you're also having a multiple steal. You can't have a steal a secondless or often so you can steal a third or a third at home. So how often do these things happen? Those games I studied had 9,300,000 plate appearances, and you look at those, over 3 million of them had a runner on first base. And of those, 1,800,000 were run on first only, 300,000 runners on first and third, and last two categories combined 890,000. So 61% of the time is run on first, the runner is only on first. And I decided to make the analysis simpler by concentrating on the situations where there's just a runner on first. I'll talk a little bit about runners in first and third. The things get a lot messier when you try to consider the other runners. I'm mostly talking about situations with the runner on first, which is most of the cases that we find. So how often do they attempt? Now here's the number that I'm sure you haven't seen before. The first column there, labeled attempted, of all those 3 million cases of runner on first base, how often is there an attempt to steal second base? If you look at all of them together, it's 6%. Runner on first only, 8.9. First and third is 5.2. Those last two categories, 0.5%. So I can easily drop the last two categories. They simply just don't happen very much. But it's nice, it's interesting to see that the percentage of trying is very different. How about the percentage of success? If you look with just the runner on first, it's 67%, which is right at the break-even point. Runners on first only, I said this, all runners are 60-something. Runners on first only, it's 64%, which is below the break-even point. Runners on first and third, it's phenomenal. You steal 89% of the time. First and second base load, you steal 90% of the time. But the total chance of doing that is way down. So I find that sort of fascinating. First and third is only 5%, they attempt it 5% of the time. It's only 10% of the opportunities, but they make it almost all the time. Gotta believe that's a surprise factor. Although in Little League, of course, runners are first and third. In high school, it's automatic that the runner goes to second. In the big, that's not quite the same thing. So I graphed this over years as well. How about the first graph I showed you was the number of steals. This is the rate of attempts. And we find the same basic pattern. It's probably not a big surprise that in the years when there were more steals, there were, in fact, more attempts. Although it could have been a difference in success rate. And we find the same basic pattern. It starts out real low, goes up high in the 80s, the two leagues go apart in this and then come back together. They did. Let's look at some individual pitchers. I usually don't like concentrating on individuals because I'm always worried about small data sets and things getting a little messy. But the whole point of the study was to find out if there were different pitchers and catchers and some runners that would make a difference. So even though it's a busy slide, I highlighted in red the column I want you to pay attention to first, and this is the total number of situations that pitcher faced of a runner on first only. So that says Nolan Ryan pitched to 4,543 batters only with a runner on first base. He allowed 630 steals a second and had 232 caught stealing. That 19.0 means that runners tried to steal against Ryan 19% of the time. And did they make it? They made it 73% of the time. This is mystery to nobody in here. Everybody knows that Ryan wasn't very good at that. But there's some other names on that list. Greg Maddux had a reputation of not being good at it. He's further down the list. He allowed people to try 15.5% of the time. They made it 74% of the time. Man, that's a pretty lousy success rate from the defense's point of view. A couple others I want to mention. Jim Cott only allowed people to steal 4.8% of the time, by half of the major league average, and they only made it 58%. And my favorite on the list, of course, is Warren Spahn. Warren Spahn allowed 50 steals and had 117 caught stealing. I mean, those are small numbers because nobody ever tried. 4% of the time, people tried, and when they did, they made it 30% of the time. That's not even half of the break-even rate. So it's pretty easy to see that Spahn deserved his reputation of shutting down the running game. People didn't even try that. Let's do this more systematically. Let's look at all the people who allowed a lot of attempts. So this time the red column is percentage of attempts. The immortal Steve DiMura and David Palmer are right there at the top. 20.7% of the time that runners were on first base only, they tried to steal. And they did pretty well, 75%, 72%. Ryan's most of the way down that list, but he still makes it. This list is everybody who faced at least 500 of these situations through my data set, and ranking them by the order of the highest rate of allowing it. And you notice that the percentage of success in all these are way over the break-even point, which says that the runners knew who was pitching. They ran more often on the guys they were going to see. It's not random when you're going to run. They're running against the guys that aren't very good at stopping. Let's do the other end. How about the pitchers who don't allow very many steals? The first thing to notice, after you get the big call of all the opportunities, look at the total stolen bases, 13 and 6, 5 and 11. These guys are mostly, except for two of them, from the early part of the zero when people weren't running. So in fact, you've got Lou Grissi only allowed 2.8% of his runners on first base to steal. That's only 19 guys, so I'm not sure what to make out of that. The point I would make, these guys who allowed very few steals, look at the percentage success in the last column. They were terrible. The runners were terrible in this. So it's kind of the mirror image of the other one. The runners were more often to run on the people they're going to do well against, and they're not very often to run on the people they're going to do badly against. So there is some learning there. These guys aren't completely clueless with what they're doing. They're running at the right times. So the same thing for catchers. I set the cutoff for catchers at 1,000 of these situations instead of 500. And the first thing to realize is Ivan Rodriguez has been catching for 17,600 times when this run on first base. That's a mind-boggling kind of number. Only 6.2% of them tried to steal, about two-thirds of the major league average, and only 53.7% of them made it. So Rodriguez is incredibly good at this. Go further down the list, near the bottom, four from the bottom, Yogi Berra. We all think of Yogi Berra primarily for his offensive abilities. American leaguers only ran against him 4.9% of the time. They only made it 46.9%. So Yogi did pretty well in addition to being a tremendous hitter. There's a bunch of other names you would suspect. These are ranked by number of chances. These are guys who play all the time. Neil Santiago, who has a great reputation, doesn't stand out as much as you might think. 8.6 is a little better than the league average, but 64.9 is only a little bit lower than the cutoff. So let's do this now to the catchers who allowed the most attempts. Now, Keith Moreland, being a well-known defensive stalwart, probably was surprised that he's at the top, followed by Matty Sasser. You know, these are guys that you probably don't want to have behind the plate for your team in the ninth inning. 17% down to 14%. Some interesting names in there, Bob Brenly. Bruce Bochy is way up near the list. Vip Fokarova, Craig Biggio, a second fielder and second baseman to be at this time. So these are guys who allow a lot of steals and will come up what their success percentages are. All of them are above the break-even point except Brenly. So once again, runners are running with the right catchers. So here's my favorite table because it puts a Dodger on top. Roy Campanella, this is the people who allowed the fewest attempts. Roy Campanella holds 9,000 opportunities, only allowed 4% of the runners to steal, and 40% of them made it. That's just incredible. All these guys are percentage of the last column way below the break-even point. So when I was doing this, I did determine that Campanella threw out 23 consecutive base stealers over a period of 2 years. Because it took 2 years to do it, because people were trying. All right, let's look at the guys who steal a lot. And I decided to put a cutoff of 300 steals over the 65 years. Any player who had 300 steals gets put in here. There were 76 players who had that number. And what you find is, on the left-hand column, they account for 7.4% of the total opportunities, 20% of the attempts, and 22% of the steals. These are the guys who steal a lot. Break this down. Top and bottom. The top is the numbers of percentage of attempt and percentage of success for these elite base runners. They try almost a quarter of the time, and they make it almost three-quarters of the time. If you subtract them out of the total, everybody else is left on the bottom. And what's left on the bottom is from down to 8% overall and about 62%. So once again, the elite base stealers don't just run a lot, they're successful running a lot. Those are two different things. Highest percentage attempts in a single season. This is an amazing table. Number one, Lou Rock. 1974, he stole 118 bases. Only 105 of them were steals of second, but nobody in first. And he's caught 28 times. So he stole 74% of the time. Three-quarters of the time he's on first base, he's going to second. And he made it almost 79% of the time. So you go down that list, Don Omar Moreno, he makes the list, went 50% of the time, makes it almost 79%. Chin Rains makes it 87% of the time. Now these are the single-season ones that are pretty high. I was trying to do something to explain that 1980 to 1991 gap, and I looked at the guys who stole a lot of bases in those between the two leagues, and it didn't show me anything. I'll just get past that. Last thing I want to talk about real quickly, there are other factors besides who the runners are. How about how many outs there are? We certainly know that this is going to be contingent on that. So there's the choices, there are one and two. And you find that they're not even, that there are fewer people trying with zero outs and more people trying with one out. But the percentage of attempts is lowest with no outs. So teams aren't running as much when there's nobody out. Maybe it's an idea that you've got a chance for more runs later on, you don't want to mess up the inning early on. Yet at the end, you're running a little bit more. But the only time you actually make it more is above the break-even point is when you already have two outs. How about in relation to the inning? This is interesting. The first three innings have the largest amount, then the middle innings have the lowest, and then the seventh and later in terms of opportunities, which is maybe intuitive, maybe not. There's many more opportunities in the first inning. How about the percentage of trying? Teams try it more often in the middle innings, even though that's the lowest of the occurrences. There's many more attempts, and the percentage of success doesn't really matter. The percentage of success is the same. The percentage of trying is very, very different. How about in relation to the score? Well, if you're less than minus three, it means you're trailing by four or more. Very few opportunities. They only try 2% of the time, but they made it 83% of the time. Probably the defensive team says, we're ahead by four. You want to steal? That's nice. And they let it go. And so that's when they're made. Most of them are in the middle range, because that's where most of the score is. It's a million and a half. They're stealing 10.5, trying 10% of the time, but making it less than the break-even point. And then with a big blowout lead, four runs or more, not as many chances. They steal a little often. They still don't get to the break-even point. And of course, as we all know, that teams get mad if you steal against them with a big lead. It's not happening. Okay, conclusion. Frequency steal attempts has varied a lot in the last 65 years. Success rate has been above the break-even point only recently. Runners are more successful against pitchers who allow many attempts and less successful against pitchers who allow fewer attempts, which may not be surprising, but it's nice to see that it's really true. Catchers show that same pattern, but it's not as extreme as it is with pitchers. Runners with lots of steals attempt more often and exceed more often. Succeed, and this large unexplained difference between the AL and NL for those 10 years, I'm still not going to get, and the outstanding score should be expected effects. I have two more quick slides to show, because that's not what it is. I showed early draft this paper to some friends, and Tom Ruin commented that I wasn't properly dealing with pickoffs, which was true. So I decided I would go back and tabulate pickoff leaders for pitchers and catchers. And here's what we have. Steve Carlson picked off 135 runners in his time in the major leagues. Frigo, in terms of run created form and so on, having 135 outs, you put 135 guys on and remove them that way. And he headed his way up there. Mark Burley, Spahn is up there. Remember, Spahn did that with very few attempts, even as many people on. The interesting thing to me in this list is that there's only one right-hander on the list. Charlie Huff. Charlie Huff takes off a lot of people. I hope he was pointing knuckleballs to first base. I couldn't believe it. It's like Charlie Huff makes this list. That's just incredible. And here's the catcher list. Ivan Rodriguez is up there. Yadier Molina, with about a third as many opportunities, is way up there. Jose Molina, down at the bottom, and on a percentage basis, is huge. All these catchers are new guys except Sammy White at the bottom, who played in the 50s and early 60s. And one last figure. The first one I showed you was stolen bases per game per team from 1947 to 2011. Here it is from 1901. So I studied there. This part of the graph, where we don't have as much play-by-play data, they were playing a real different game 100 years ago. They're stealing 1.5 bases per team per game 100 years ago. It's an incredible variation over that time. Okay, that's it. There's a long list of things I did not quantify, and right versus left hand is one, right versus left hand batter, the effects on the batter. I already had too much to do in one presentation, so I might try to expand that next time and look more at that. Is there a general left-handed advantage? Certainly, a lot of those guys are left-handed, but I'm not quite ready to say it's completely left versus right.
The tremendous drop in 1920, right around 1920, seems surprising because if you figure it would have taken managers a few years to adopt to the livelier environment. And I wonder, that's also the year that they started calling defensive indifference. I wonder if that had something to do with it.
What? 1920s, beginning defensive indifference? I didn't know that. What I do know is that you can't do the analysis the way I really want to, because caught stealing has only been recorded in the American League since 1920 or 21, and it was only counted in the National League since 1951. So the record sheet counts have a lot of plays that are described as caught stealing, and we record them as caught stealing, but they weren't official categories, so it's an iffier thing to do. You're absolutely right.
I suggest that the huge split in the 80s between the National League and American League was due to the prevalence of artificial turf in the National League, which puts a huge premium on speed, on defense, and those guys aren't going to forget that they're fast and they're on base, so they're obviously going to go and run.
And there's that much less artificial turf in 1992? I mean, you may be right about this, right? Is Mark on here?
The league was dominated by artificial turf. The Americans would still have a lot of grass.
That's a very interesting thought. I mean, this is obviously intentional stuff. So good, I don't see that. I don't know that. I like that.
Did you look at full counts in less than 2 hours?
We only have pitch data from 1988 on, and I decided I wanted to use as many opportunities as I could. If I do follow this up, I've got a lot of things to look at, like does the batter following a base dealer get more pitches to look at? Does he take three pitches before? But I can only do that from 1988 on. I would like to do that, but I didn't decide to cut it short on this.
Yeah, I know that today, like the example you gave of the first and third where the guy's still in second and they'll let him have it, well, today they would call that defensive indifference.
There really aren't that many defensive indifferences. There obviously are some, not every day. There are, but there's not that many defensive indifferences.
And it seems like there are a lot more than there were in the 70s.
I don't know that.
I think I saw a number of somebody, but maybe it wasn't enough.
Our data would have that, but I did not look at that. I don't understand.
Yeah. I think thing about the 80s might have been the Cardinals. They were in the low hundreds before that, and they got into the high 200s, and they were sort of the big team in the league, or one of the big teams, and I think they made such a tone for the league.
So this is the Whitey Herzog effect, is what this is completely.
Yeah,
yeah, that table that I'm going to pass real quick. I mean, Vince Coleman is on there, and the only big base deal in the American League is Ricky Henderson. But Tim Raines, obviously he's not in St. Louis, is on. Maybe it could be the one team dominated it that much. Okay?
Yeah, I would just like to emphasize what Dave just said. I did a study of the 80s looking at correlation between county status and major league standings. And steals had no correlation with standings whatsoever, except in 1 year, 1987. So I think that Dave may well be onto something.
So if I subtract out all the Cardinals runners and redo, maybe the difference collapses, right?
Well, but it's also the Cardinals were the team that was the big team in the league, so other teams would anyway.
Well, managers don't follow each other blind.
You had one slide where there was a difference between the first and third inning.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I think that I've done several studies on the effect of inning in the past, and one of the things that we learned is that the best offensive inning of all, the best offensive half inning, is the bottom of the first. There's more runs scored in the bottom of the first. What's that? All right. So I think that in the first three innings, teams are doing more standard offense. And they're, as the game goes on, they're starting to have lower and lower scoring. I think their strategy is changing as the time's going on there. Maybe I can break this down more finely instead of just doing three bins. There, Clem said I should do it, like going up sort of the score differential, like 10 bins or something like that. I don't know.
But why are there three times as many opportunities for the same number of innings?
The thing I did on batting order in Seattle in 2006, you have to consider who's batting in those innings. And if you look at that, the first three innings, the first inning, you're sure who's going to be batting. It's your top batters. In the fourth through sixth inning, you're more likely not to have the top batters batting. So there's many fewer opportunities because there's many fewer men on base because it's the weaker batters that are batting.
Three times.
There it is.
We should do one more question.
Okay, one more. Cliff? No, it hurt me enough to do that by individual pitchers. I didn't try to do it by individual teams. Although Ragland's got me wondering here about the Cardinals.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's up there.